Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Before we begin today's show, we'd like to extend a warm welcome to our new listeners on KRJF, a new community station in Santa Rosa. We look forward to hearing from our friends up in the North Bay. Today we are talking about recycled trash. The United States exports 30% of recycled trash. For decades, almost half of what ends up in our recycling bins goes to a factory in China. Nearly 4,000 shipping containers full of recycled trash leaves our ports every single day, or at least it used to. According to the New York Times, in 2016 alone, China processed at least half of the world's exports of waste paper, metals, and plastic, totaling around 7 million tons. But in January, China enacted what they're calling the National Sword, a new policy banning 24 types of recyclable solid waste, including plastic, scrap paper, and textiles. So what is the U.S., why does the U.S. export so much of its recyclable trash to China? What does this ban mean? How can we actually get to zero waste? Kate O'Neill is an associate professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy, and Management at UC Berkeley. Professor O'Neill is working on her third book, Waste, will focus on the global plastic scrap trade in China. And Professor O'Neill joins me in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
Great to have you. Well, we have done many shows about e-waste, electronic waste. A lot of people know that electronic waste is sent to China. I'm guessing a lot of people don't know that what they throw in their bins, the recycled stuff, newspaper, plastic, was also sent to China.
That's right. Very few people know that at all. And in many ways, it's been a hidden problem, partly behind the e-waste issue, which we are all familiar with. So this issue is really bringing to light what happens to our recycling.
And when did this start?
It started at about the year 2000, which was actually the year that China joined the World Trade Organization. And soon after that point, it rose exponentially to a peak in, and this is just talking about plastic right now, in the peak in 2012, the U.S. alone exported over 1 million tons of plastic to China for reprocessing.
Why China?
China is our largest trade partner, as we know, and they ship a lot of goods to us every day in container ships. And those container ships go back with their holds full of trash. It's very cheap. It's a process called reverse haulage. And it's actually cheaper for us to ship from the West Coast plastic to China than it is to the East Coast.
So it's so interesting to visualize this. You've got multinationals in China where so much stuff is made. A lot of the plastic junk and things are made. So that's shipped over to be sold in big box stores. People consume these things. These things are full of plastic. And then that plastic and other recyclables go back on those ships in those huge boxes and that's sent back to China.
That's pretty much what happens. Yep.
And so why is it so cheap to send back?
I think it's because of the, well, it's cheap, but there's also a market in China. Recycling depends on certainly us putting stuff in the bins and having that willingness to do it, but it really needs a market. Recycling does not happen, as we are finding out, with no one to actually buy the scrap. China has been the world's booming economic power for so long that it actually needs a lot of the scrap we export. I mean, we not only export the trash, but we also export aluminum, steel, copper, all of those sorts of scraps that are used in factories in China.
Many cities like San Francisco like to talk about their plan to eventually be a zero-waste city. So was our recycling in San Francisco sent to China?
Yes. It about, I think around about half the recycling in California, I think they say a third is shipped, and most of that goes to China. So yes, this is what you might call the flip side of the zero waste economy.
And what has China done with all of the recycling trash they've received? Because it's not just from the United States, it's all over the world.
It is all over the world. That's a very good question. Honestly, we're not entirely sure about all of it. We know that indeed some of the scrap of different sorts most certainly does get reused and recycled, but a lot of it is low quality. It arrives dirty. It gets quite possibly landfilled or incinerated. But I think one of the issues is that even though plastics are a really good example, they certainly go to scrap yards, but often those are very informal yards where workers reprocess, pelletize, and then melt the waste, the plastics, under very dangerous conditions.
I was actually going to ask you about that, because when so many stories about electronic waste mm-hmm. came out in the last couple of decades mm-hmm. and looked at how this electronic waste and the chemicals in these things, like my computer, the keyboard system, the motherboard, all of that, were affecting especially children in China. Mm-hmm. Do we know how this recycled trash is affecting the people who actually process it in China?
We don't have a lot of data, but I would encourage people to look up a documentary called Plastic China, made by a Chinese documentary filmmaker. And this documentary had very powerful impacts. Certainly here, it's not terribly widely seen, but it had a lot of film festival coverage and a lot of environmental groups show it. And in China, it was initially available, but the government took it off Chinese internet. But there's every sign that people in the Politburo actually saw this film, and it helped motivate their actions. Because what it shows is two families, one owns a scrapyard, one makes up the workers, both adults and children. And you can see them working in this yard with burning plastic. And you can see the labels on the plastic and the cups and so on, and they're recognizable. They come from us or from Europe, and these families are sort of drowning in it.
Mm. Can you talk more when you said it motivated people to act? Who exactly acted?
Oh, you mean the Chinese government?
Yes.
This decision actually came from very high levels in China. It came from the Politburo. It was announced by the Ministry of Environmental Protection.
What is the Politburo?
The Politburo, sorry, though, that's the leading cabinet, the leading group in Beijing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so they decided last year, they said, we do not want to be the world's recycling dump anymore.
Right. That's right. And this decision had been building for a while. Their first effort to hold back scrap, make sure it was clean and properly baled so waste was not mixed, happened in 2013 with something called Operation Green Fence. That helped us clear up our act for a bit. And then I think we reverted back to old habits. And China's been talking quite a while about enacting even stricter measures. And for a long while, the waste industry, the scrap industry, were not sure whether it would happen or not. But so the announcement last July that the certain kinds of scrap would be banned actually was quite a shock, especially the extent. And when I say ban, let me say that's not exactly a ban. What it is that China has enacted extremely restrictive contamination limits on plastics. So previously, and other scrap, previously you could have 4 to 5% contamination in a bale. That's now down to 0.5%. It's very hard to reach on our side.
How is that enforced?
They will stop shipments at customs when they come in and not issue import permits to the brokers who are shipping the waste from here.
In so many of the articles I've read about this, various numbers are thrown around. For example, in 2016, China imported a total of 45 million tons of scrap metal, waste paper, and plastic from countries across the globe worth $18 billion.
Yep.
What does that mean exactly?
These numbers are very large and often like hard to visualize. But you know, it means that the large amounts of material that we throw away and recycled essentially means they have a place to go. They've had historically a market, people willing to pay for that scrap.
What strikes you about how countries have responded to this? As you said, it came as a big shock. I mean, we live in a very throwaway society.
We do.
Right? And I'd love to talk with you about this later, but we hardly, on certain shows and in certain circles, we talk about reducing consumption. But what we're seeing is so many companies say, look, it's just greener. You can buy it as often as you want, and it's compostable, for example. So we just throw so much away in this society.
We do. And, you know, I think we've seen a lot of changes in the way we do recycling. I mean, I know that where I've lived in the Bay Area, we've had expansions of recycling programs. So we're told, oh, you know, just throw it all in the recycling bin and we'll take care of it. This is great. You're looking after the environment. And I think what this story shows is how fragile that chain, that supply chain, if you will, of waste is, and the fact that these large decisions being made in China, being announced to the World Trade Organization, are affecting the decisions, you know, we're going to make this week about what we put in our recycling bin. So it's quite incredible set of implications that I think are only just filtering through to the general public. The trash industry, the scrap industry are extremely concerned. When the announcement was made, the main scrap industry association, trade association said, you know, this could cost 40,000 U.S. jobs because of the people who are engaged in processing the recyclables, cleaning and baling them up that get sent overseas, and the very real prospect that a lot of municipalities are going to start closing or severely cutting back what they will accept.
Do you think that will happen?
It's already happening. And in Australia, where I'm from, that in certain cities, I understand that our municipalities have stopped collecting certain kinds of recyclables altogether.
Can you talk a little bit about how things have really changed just in the last couple of years when it comes to our throwaway culture in the United States? I remember over the holidays, and I just brought this story up from KPIX, the recycling industry is calling for changes because so many people now shop online, and recycling companies were pointing directly at Amazon saying, we just can't handle it anymore. People are buying so much online, and these big boxes, even if you buy something small, it tends to come in a pretty big box.
Yep.
And it's just completely overwhelming the system.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, we made an order from Amazon Fresh, and maybe they'll be listening to this, but of 12 bottles of instant coffee, of that, you know, cold brew coffee, and they pretty much all arrived in their own bag. I'm like, really? This is not practical. No, the packaging industry is a real issue globally in terms of cardboard use and the things that go with it, like packing tape. You know, it can't be recycled if it's still got packing tape on it. So people don't necessarily know to remove that. So, yeah, that's becoming probably one of the bigger issues in terms of how we what we're producing and the trash we're easily throwing away. On the converse, we're seeing more and more campaigns against certain consumer items that plastic bags are a good example. We've seen regulations around those all over the world. The one I've seen really take off in the last couple of months is plastic straws, single-use plastic straws, which many of us think is great because it's so visible and it's an easy decision you can make when you get your drinks, you buy your coffee, you buy your boba in the morning or during the day, and you can just say, okay, what can we use instead of the straw? And that's been something that I think has really highlighted this issue to a lot of people.
Yes. In fact, two Mondays ago, we did a show about the International Ocean Film Festival.
Oh, right.
And there was a documentary called Straws.
Yep.
And it's still shocking to think that every day in this country, just the U.S., 520 million straws are used and thrown away every day.
Yeah.
And some of them are ending up in the noses of turtles, for example, in the oceans.
Oh, yeah.
And so, for example, straws that are sent to China, how do they deal with that?
Well, this is the thing. There are certain kinds of plastic, as we know. There's really, if you flip a bottle or something over, you'll see a little number within the triangle, and that's the resin identification code. And there are seven of those. And of those, only the ones that are numbered ones and sometimes the ones number two are actually easily recyclable. Number ones, rigid containers and so on, are the best. We recycle those here. Those tend not to get shipped. And they can be pretty much turned into an equivalent. But other sorts of plastics and straws fall into this, you know, not so recyclable.
Landfill.
They downgrade extremely quickly. You know, plastics do that generally. So it's a real problem. I would guess most of them are not recycled. at all.
Today we're speaking with Kate O'Neill, Associate Professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management at UC Berkeley. She's working on her third book. It's called Waste, and it'll focus on the global plastic scrap trade in China. China recently announced that it no longer wants to recycle the world's trash. It stopped collecting most recycled trash in January, and now cities around the world are really scrambling to figure out what to do with so much recycled trash. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts on how we recycle our trash? What changes would you like to see? There's so many differences based on the cities you live in, the colors of the bins, what cities recycle, what's the system like in your city? We're also live on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/KALW, watch the show there, and take part in the conversation. You can also tweet at Your Call Radio. Let's hear from GS calling from South Lake Tahoe. Hi, GS. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. The basic two words I'd like to put out there is life cycle. This is a very important concept. Most large businesses understand that every product has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's EOL that we're not thinking about, end of life. And my proposal is that every single manufacturer of any product, period, should be held accountable for its entire life cycle. If they make it, they should deal with they should be responsible financially for every aspect of what happens, not just to the product, but let's say specifically to the packaging of the product. If that's not happening, we're just going to leave it all kind of hanging in the air. And I'll just add one last thing. This is sort of an emblematic aspect of our naivete as a species. You know, we found coal. We started burning it. Oops, a lot of problems. We make products. We came up with plastic. So far, so good. But unless we start holding the developers and manufacturers of these products who push them out into the environment, be responsible all the way to the last molecule, then we're just not finishing our responsibility. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we saw something similar with e-waste. Mm-hmm. You had groups like Greenpeace name names like Apple Computer. You're not doing a good job of allowing mm-hmm. people to recycle the phone or the computer. You need to do exactly what GS just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The complication, I think, with plastics and packaging, and in this case, and there are ways around it, but the complication is that these aren't produced necessarily by huge identifiable companies like Apple or HP, and they're produced in a country that does not have these visibility regulations, even though, and this is another side of the story, that actually Beijing is very interested in particularly solving its own domestic environmental crisis. So we're seeing some moves in that direction. So that makes it harder to really think about how to enact or enforce extended producer responsibility. I do agree that there's more and more agreement that end of life is not the point where you throw materials away. So that's becoming, I think, a very important piece of a lot of city policies, a lot of zero waste and circular economy initiatives. I do think a target that we mentioned earlier might be the very large companies that do a lot of shipping, at the very least to make them responsible for the packaging. I think that's going to be a direction we will be moving in.
How do you think a company like Amazon should be held responsible for all of its packaging?
Mm-hmm. let's see now. This is probably a bit above my pay grade, but in Europe, they have take-back legislation where companies that produce packaging are expected or supposed to take back that packaging and deal with it themselves. That is something that the large companies could do. They could even make it, they can make it voluntary. It could be regulatory. I'm not sure exactly which one would work.
We might want to do a show about that, because I was just reading over the weekend that the postal workers are becoming really angry because they're basically delivering mm-hmm. all of these boxes.
Yep.
And it's strenuous work.
It is. It is. It is on the post office, on FedEx, on delivery workers. Mm. Yes.
Speaking of corporations, I brought this up during our straw show. A number of groups that do beach cleanups mm-hmm. are now keeping lists of the brands that they're finding in the sand. Mm-hmm. So Nestle, Coca-Cola, the list goes on. And just recently, companies like L'Oreal, Mars, Pepsi, the Coca-Cola Company, Walmart, Unilever said that by 2025, they will ensure that their packaging is recyclable or reusable.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Again, it's something that companies really need to be held to. And I think this case of waste exports, plastic scrap exports, mean that we can't just say, oh, it's recyclable, oh, it's taken away. Well, then we really need to know what happens to it. Because what's also happening as China enacts this ban is that the scrap is being diverted to other locations in Southeast Asia, is particularly becoming a large recipient now of this waste. It's a sign of this global economy that these changes can happen very quickly. And again, we do not know what's happening in these countries. We maybe even have less of an idea because plastic scrap is being shipped to 15 countries rather than one. Mm. And so again, we can say things are going to be recyclable, but we really have to focus as consumers on using less, on demanding less.
So because China enacted this ban, now we're seeing states and cities across the world send their trash to other countries.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's go next to Kyle in San Francisco. Hi, Kyle. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. With education and public awareness, change does happen. For example, remember the old CD covers that were huge plastic and then people had it reduced to cellophane wrapping. I'm just wondering if this ban from China is a good thing, because then it'll force us to pass laws that will make packaging, the companies use recycling as part of their packaging.
Yep. There are a lot of people arguing that maybe ultimately it's going to be something of a win-win. We will have a long adjustment stage, though. And I think that the people I've talked to, I was on a panel yesterday with a number of people who work in the trash and recycling industry, and they were saying, yes, public education is really critical, but it's hard to get a message across right now. The message that actually needs to be gotten across is, don't recycle unless you're absolutely sure it's clean. Right now, they are dealing with floods and floods of waste. It does not slow down. So that's part of the education. The other part is, well, to what extent can we push consumers to really think? I mean, I think in the Bay Area, we know that we have to think carefully about what we recycle and where we send it. But throughout the country and parts of the world, do we want people? Can people start sorting and cleaning their recycling in the way that they do in other parts of the world?
And speaking to your point about dirty recycling, China was complaining that the trash that they were getting from the United States is not clean, and it was costing them a lot more to process that dirty trash.
Oh, totally. China actually has quite a leg to stand on in this case. You know, again, there are contradictions in that the Chinese government has also talked about bringing in domestic scrap to replace the imported scrap. And some people say, well, that could be even more problematic because Chinese plastics tend to be less high quality than the plastics we produce. But I think part of China's motivation, too, is the phrase that they used when they announced the policy last July was no more foreign garbage. So, you know, we tend to think that this is part of China's changing role in the world. And to be a large power, to be this new leader as the U.S. declines, means that you can't be seen as the world's dump site. And I think that was a very critical concern of the Chinese government as well.
Today we're speaking with Kate O'Neill, Associate Professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management at UC Berkeley, about recycling. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about a provision in the tax bill that was tucked away. It encourages investors to put their money into economically distressed areas. They're so-called opportunity zones. But what does this mean exactly? We'll find out how this policy could shape neighborhoods in your city and how states can encourage investments without incentivizing gentrification. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line. yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to join today's show about recycling, it's our One Planet series. You can email us there. We are also live on Facebook, facebook.com/KALW, with Kate O'Neill, Associate Professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management at UC Berkeley. She's working on her third book called Waste. It'll focus on the global plastic scrap trade in China. And you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. You can also tweet at Your Call Radio. Thank you for the call, Kyle. Let's go next to Alicia in Berkeley. Hi, Alicia. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for this series and for your guests. It was so much expertise. My question has to do with my granddaughter, who's 7. I volunteer at her Girl Scout troop, and we're doing a series on ecology broadly. And the school actually has a very good recycling program with monitors, so when the kids finish lunch, you know, they do recycle. But the details are not really very well known. And I was wondering if your guest knows whether there are films for children that kind of punch up that just recycling, especially dirty stuff, is not enough. And, you know, things like the straws, that most of the kids, what's really popular with the kids are these fruit drinks that have the straw attached. And, you know, I just wondered how to raise the consciousness around those issues.
Oh, I don't know of any films exactly, but I think if you look up a lot of the organizations that deal with plastic straws and plastic bags, they have a lot of educational films. I know that some of them can be quite distressing to young children. And so, you know, a degree of care there, but I'm sure there's a lot of the campaigns that are out there are very much targeted at young people.
The documentary Straws, depending on the age, there is a scene that's very disturbing of a straw in a turtle's nose, and there's a lot of blood coming out of the turtle. There is a student version of this film, though, and the website is strawsfilm.com, and I'm pretty sure it's available online, so you might want to recommend that one. And thank you so much for calling, Alicia. If we can think of anything else, we will put links on our website, yourcallradio.org. Oh, there is another one. A couple years ago, we did a show about a documentary called Zero Waste, and it's about San Francisco's efforts to get to zero waste.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a great job of really explaining how this process works, because most people, they throw it in a bin and they don't know what happens after
that. Yeah, that's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for calling. Let's go next to Miguel in Santa Cruz. Hi, Miguel. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much. I had a question. What are your thoughts on, I know there's companies out there that, you know, recycle hard to recycle waste, like TerraCycle, for example. They partner with some of the companies that you mentioned, like Unilever, and Procter & Gamble, and some of those larger CPG brands that are putting out a lot of plastic packaging.
Yep.
You know, what are your thoughts on participating in programs like that and with, you know, companies? And should other companies, you know, aim to, you know, create maybe more packaging that is not necessarily recyclable? Mm-hmm. Because in one way, recycling is almost a Band-Aid on our waste problem, but essentially ending, you know, plastic packaging in its entirety. Do you ever foresee that happening in the future, or us needing to do that?
Do I see that happening? Yes. I'm going to guess that's going to happen. I mean, we talk about packaging. I also think that could be another fairly low-hanging fruit. We do know of other options. I mean, you know, once you start thinking about it, it gets complicated. There's a lot of energy that goes into producing paper and other kinds of packaging. But if you think about it, we got rid of those, pretty much got rid of those styrofoam peanuts are gone. So that's, except, you know, with a few exceptions. So we have made those changes. I think partnering with the large corporations is a great idea. I think, and Rose and I were just talking about this during the quick break, is that it's also a huge burden to put on consumers. I mean, even I, as sort of an expert in this area, or maybe because I am, I tend to sort of sit in my office and fret as I write about waste, about, you know, the coffee I'm drinking, or, you know, the waste that I'm producing by eating at my desk. So there you go. So I think that we have to remember that the largest producers of waste are often corporations that either produce or package goods. And, you know, industrial waste tends to come from factories and so on as well. So we need to bear that in mind. And I think that partnering with corporations, especially there are, you know, now that we've got some very high level foundations and groups engaged in this work, that I think that's a positive way forward as well.
We are seeing a lot of laws. The city of Malibu recently banned plastic utensils and straws. And then the New York Times had an op-ed recently called Let's Bag Plastic Bags, basically ban them. It's been 3 years since Maine town started banning plastic. Here in California, voters decided to ban plastic bags, but then the plastic lobby fought that. And we have a question from David who says, last time I heard, the plastic manufacturing lobby has bamboozled the legal system with an obstructive noncompliance request. Do you have any updates on that?
I haven't been able to follow exactly. I'm only really sort of catching up on the California plastic bag situation, other than, you know, what I use myself. But yes, I do know that the plastic industry is fighting this. It is likely to be a losing battle. You know, I think maybe we'll see reusable, as we do, you know, some quite sturdy plastic bags, but that people pay for. Yeah, you know, maybe that'll last for a while.
Well, we'll look for an update on that. New York is considering a ban on plastic bags. I mean, this is really just taking off.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the phone call. We will look up the details and hopefully get that to you by the end of the show. Let's see. We've got a number of emails from listeners. What happens, this is from Philip, what happens to the waste that is refused entry at a Chinese port by the authorities? Is it returned to the country of origin or is it dumped in the sea?
That's a really great question, because at the moment, actually, as you know, I heard from the panel I was on yesterday, that there's a lot of ships containing bales of plastic that are kind of hanging out in customs around ports in China, maybe because they might expect a change. But there is still a lot of local anxiety by local companies who actually want that scrap. But yeah, it's sent back pretty much at the expense of the shipper, as far as I know. Now, of course, you know, we are a little bit more accountable in this country and in many of the ones that ship to take it back. I know from my early work, in the early part of my career, was just on trade and hazardous waste. This was even before we really knew about e-waste. And there, you know, shipments would get turned away, and the ship would be one of those flag of convenience, hard to trace ships, and it would show up somewhere with a new name and its holds empty. So, you know, who knows, but people are considering this as potentially a serious contribution to plastics in the ocean.
Well, thank you for that question, Philip. We have another email from Robin who says, why do we buy from Amazon? Just think of all the televisions that went or are going into landfills because of the change from analog to digital. Mm-hmm. What a shame. And then there's the obsolescence of being able to get anything repaired anymore. This is very, very true. One has to just throw things away and replace wasting a whole lot of material rather than just replacing a small part and continuing to use it. I've had this experience with the sewing machine. She writes, I tried to find someone to repair it, but was forced to replace a workable machine. If only someone could have just repaired and replaced the motherboard in it.
Oh, yeah. And this is, again, I think, where we're seeing another shift. Just to talk about Europe again, in countries there, you're seeing small businesses really being encouraged to set up where people can take stuff to be repaired. So that is something that we're seeing with something like a sewing machine or boots or whatever. You know, there's a place you can take them. With iPhones and laptops and so on, it's a different kind of a movement. This equipment is proprietary. It's very hard to break in and fix it. Certainly, it's hard to do legally. So we're starting to see, and I think California is looking into this, something called the Right to Repair movement, which is about creating electronics that can be repaired, that aren't just have to be thrown out when they die, you know, 2 or 3 years after you purchase them. So that's going to be another battlefront, and I think that's going to be at a government level and state government level to have to deal with that issue. And I think that's going to be an exciting thing to watch.
Kate O'Neill is Associate Professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management at UC Berkeley. She's working on her third book called Waste, and it'll focus on the global plastic scrap trade in China. This is a forthcoming book, but yep. Can you share any of the research that really stands out for you?
Yeah, actually, this book is it's more general. It's looking at sort of what I see as the changing global political economy of waste, using this case as something that's fairly central. So I'm looking at how waste is really emerging as a new global resource frontier. Like that we are seeing, we're running out of other resources. This is really the only resource that's rapidly growing in many ways. So yeah. I'm looking at how electronic waste, scrap, food waste are really starting to become commodities and resources, but are also generating magnified risks. There's so much more waste being produced globally. It's being shipped around. And so you've got this resource frontier, you've got these magnified risks at the global level, and a lot of interesting cases within that. I'm sort of been tracking informal labor in the global economy and the way that waste pickers around the world have been able in many ways to create effective transboundary movements where they can work together to improve their livelihoods and also to take part in the waste trash collections in cities. So it's going to be a very broad book once I finished it, but the idea is that it's going to be fairly short and fairly accessible. So I'm excited to finally get that done.
I was happy to learn that in San Francisco, as long as your plastic bags are clean, you can put those in your recycling bin. So what you need to do is find a clear bag and then stick the plastic inside of it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I get the New York Times and the Chronicle, and every day they come in plastic.
Yes.
I keep asking them, if it's not raining, we don't need that, right? But it's all year round.
Yep.
That was a change. What other changes would you like to see at the city levels?
At the city levels, well, you know, I'm a fan of the straw ban, so at that level. In terms of collection and education, I really think a lot of sort of consumer education and a lot of, you know, just sort of awareness, even the sort of notes that recyclers can leave. I think, you know, we're also got to think about what's going on at the actual collection points. I was just seeing a story today. Sanitation waste work is the fifth most dangerous civilian occupation in the country in terms of fatalities. And actually, this is potentially making things worse. So I was reading just a story this morning that fires on landfills are increasing, partly because of all this material that's piled up. And I think I'm going to saying that slowing down, putting things in the recycling might be another way to go, at least in the short term. But yeah, I'm sort of hoping that a lot of authorities will be able to beef up their production. It's going to be expensive to actually build the plants that can process waste to the point where it meets the specifications is going to be millions of dollars. So that's also, I think if we're happy to pay our taxes to help that get done, I think that's also another piece of this puzzle.
Kate O'Neill is an associate professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management at UC Berkeley. And on today's One Planet show, we are talking about recycling and China's decision that it no longer wants to be a global recycling dump. China decided in January to stop taking recycled trash from countries around the world. Now I would like to welcome Paul Juspy to the show. Paul is the Community and Government Affairs Manager at Recology. Recology collects and processes solid waste and reclaims materials that would have otherwise been buried in a landfill. They're located in San Francisco and provide services to California, Oregon, and Washington. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for having me.
Oh, hi. It's Rose.
Oh, right.
That's okay. Lauren's our producer. Paul, what was your reaction when you heard that China was going to ban recycled trash?
A little bit shocking. It really... to happen so quickly, I think, was really the surprise to us.
How much of the recycled trash in San Francisco was sent to China?
So, quite a bit. You know, most of the paper and cardboard went to China.
And why?
They were the biggest market. They have the largest recycling facilities and factories for paper and cardboard, and they really consumed it. They really needed it because, obviously, with the trade, they needed cardboard and paper to ship their products here to the United States and all over the world.
What changes are you seeing as a result in California, Oregon, and Washington?
So changes for us at Recology, well, let me start by saying we just recently completed an $11.5 million upgrade to our recycling facility, Recycle Central, here in San Francisco. And with that upgrade, we wanted to build in flexibility that would allow us to sort more categories of material as well as increase throughput. And things like you mentioned, plastic bags in a plastic bag, those kind of materials. So we had a shakedown period and a grand reopening of the plant and started running. And then within a few months, like you were saying, January of this year, China announced the new national sword policy. Because of the improvements we made to the plant, we were able to leverage that increased throughput with increasing removing impurities in our bales. So we've been fairly successful, and our bales are cleaner, but we're not yet at China's new standard, which is about a 0.5% of impurities in a particular bale.
What?
So this year, we've budgeted another $3 million to do additional upgrades, including adding more computer-controlled optical sorters and even some artificial intelligence robotics, and to help us remove even more impurities from our bale.
At this point, Paul, what is China accepting?
So right now, China is accepting cardboard. So about 10% of our cardboard bales will meet the China standards, and those are going to China. The other paper bales are going to different markets such as Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia, India, and the Philippines.
So is San Francisco now sending recycled trash to those countries?
Well, we're sending sorted paper bales and cardboard bales to those countries.
And do you know, when you make a decision to send recycled trash to other countries, do you keep track of what happens after that is sent? Do you keep track of how workers are treated, how they are dealing with the chemicals from the plastics? We were talking earlier about all of the information that came out around e-waste. And unfortunately, children around the world were exposed to our e-waste, which is full of toxic chemicals.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So while we can't track or control, you know, foreign governments, we have a hard enough time trying to work with our own. We do go and visit factories and sites to ensure that the product that we do send is going to where they say it's going to go.
You know, I guess in some ways, Kate, it just feels strange. I mean, it's awful how this globalization system works, and we're just dumping our crap on other countries and other people to deal with.
Oh, it certainly is, and I think it's sort of maybe the way we're doing it. I mean, I will say that recycling markets here, because we don't have the manufacturing capacity or the demand, it makes sense for some shipments to occur, but the problem is, A, making sure that they're uncontaminated and properly sorted, which I think is something that we're working towards, and the scrap industry is certainly pushing for this. But the second point is, well, how do we ensure that they're dismantled under proper conditions when they arrive? I mean, there's certainly evidence that the Chinese government has been very concerned about that with e-waste, but how enforceable that is. And how enforceable, I mean, the Chinese government is pretty strong. They can do more than governments in a lot of other much poorer countries. So, it's a big, big global issue, and it speaks to where we are as a globalized system. I think it illustrates a lot of other global problems as well.
Yeah, I mean, you just think of the supply chain, and people are exploited in other countries to make the stuff that we buy that's so cheap and then exploited again to deal with the stuff that we throw away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that may be one of the good things that comes out of this China tightening is more domestic markets. Currently, we ship aluminum cans, steel cans, and glass are all shipped domestically. So we're hoping that one of the things that comes out of this China tightening of the markets is that we'll see more domestic markets open and be able to ship more product domestically.
Mm-hmm. I mean, another wrinkle is the tariff increase on aluminum and steel imports from China. And how that is playing out in this context is sort of interesting, too, because it looks like prices may rise in this country. That's good for the scrap industry, but also for anyone who might be expecting China to loosen up on these restrictions, it's more likely to dig in its heels. So, again, you can see these connections with high-level trade politics, but so that's going to be interesting moving forward as well.
Let's take a few more callers. Let's hear from Hayward in Menlo Park. Hi, Hayward. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I was mayor of Menlo Park in 2009 when the South Bay contract went to Recology for waste, and we heard a lot of presentations and on technology and targeted towards increasing diversion rate. I'm interested how well we've done meeting those targets, and that contract, if I'm not mistaken, will be coming up again here now. It may already, probably already been contested, and what sort of things are coming about. It sounded like, from what I was just hearing, that the biggest issues are paper and plastic, and getting those down to acceptable levels. So I'm interested, is there a technology solution to this? You know, what are the things that are being looked at?
Thank you.
That might be a question for Paul.
Paul?
So, I work exclusively in San Francisco, but I do know in San Mateo we partner with another company that actually runs the recycling facility down there. We do the collection, but a different company runs the recycling. However, that being said, you know, we all share technology and share the same type of equipment. So I think we are really looking to technology to help us with sorting and with removing impurities from our products, things like optical sorters that run at a higher speed and use air puffs to throw materials in different directions. We're really interested in looking at things like I was mentioning about artificial intelligence and robotics to help identify materials through optical means, and then using robotics to pick that material off at belt speeds that are much higher than humans can work at. So those are the kind of things we're looking at on the technology side.
Thank you for the call. We have an email from Carol who says, a few months ago, I was at KFC trying to sort my trash into the correct colored receptacle, and a worker said, don't bother, everything ends up in the landfill. Is there some way to find out if businesses claiming to recycle are actually doing so?
I think that's a very real question, and it's, again, on a small scale, it's hard, and I know it's also hard for businesses, many of whom actually have the will to do this, but in the end kind of have no option but to throw it out. I think that one of the things that we need to think about as consumers is any way that if we throw something out that's unclean or the wrong thing into a composting bin, it's going to be landfilled anyway. So that kind of speaks to the when in doubt, unfortunately, right now, is throw into the trash. But, yeah, companies do need to be held accountable, and I think that's up to individuals and yeah. groups, consumer groups and environmental groups to highlight. That's been effective in the past, and, you know, the large fast food chains will probably be quite receptive to that.
Paul, I was watching Recology workers pick up the bins this morning, and I was thinking, what happens when people put the wrong thing in the wrong bin? How do you deal with that?
So our drivers are trained on what should be going into what bins, and to the extent possible, they look in the bins, and when they see mistakes, they leave what we call them love notes, but they're actually tags that the drivers can fill out to let folks know that something was not sorted properly. So they leave those behind, they turn them into the office, we make a note in the system, and if we start seeing too many for the same customer, whether it's a business or an apartment building or a residence, then we'll start communicating with those folks and let them know that we're seeing this and what they can do. But usually, you know, especially on the residential side, one note from the driver is usually enough to show folks where the mistake was, and we don't see it again.
We have an email from Gail about keeping things clean, like bags, soup boxes, cartons. How thoroughly should people wash their recycling?
That's a great question. I'm glad they asked that one. So, you know, especially with the new China restrictions, we're really asking folks to take more care in their recycling. And so, you know, make sure, and things like make sure that soda can's empty before you throw it in the blue bin, or make sure that paper coffee cup is empty before you throw it in the blue bin. Liquids, food waste can contaminate the paper, and then it makes it harder to sort and harder to market that material. So even things like, you know, if you have an empty mayonnaise jar, put it with your dirty dishes, and when you're doing your dishes, give that mayonnaise jar a quick rinse in the sink and before you put it in the blue bin. And all of those little steps will really help us keep the paper clean and dry.
Paul, does Recology put any pressure on corporations? Every year around the holidays, there's stories about how, because people are shopping online, especially with Amazon, the system just can't deal with it.
Well, I think in San Francisco, we've got a pretty good system, and we are dealing with it, especially the increase in cardboard. And we do a lot of outreach, especially around the holidays. You know, there's some of the biggest food holidays of the year are Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas dinner. So we try to do more outreach around those times of year to let folks know to compost their food scraps, to, you know, throw their empty bottles and cans from the parties into the blue bins. So I think we keep up with it. As far as exerting pressure on the manufacturers, you know, that's not really something Recology does. We really look to our legislators for policies and legislation that can help with that.
Paul Giuseppe is Community and Government Affairs Manager at Recology. Kate O'Neill is Associate Professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management at UC Berkeley. She's working on her third book called Waste. Paul and Kate, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for the information, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rose.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And you can find more information about recycling at yourcallradio.org. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. You can sign up for our podcast, yourcallradio.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to Malihe Razazan and Lauren Schechter for producing today's show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.